And now for our weekly roundup of politics, it's the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
This week, primaries in Nevada. We'll suss out the details of that state's most interesting races. Plus, Republicans have a new name for their opponents. Meet the Defeatocrats. In Kansas, politicians do the unthinkable. They switch teams. And from the Virginia campaign trail, GOP Senator George Allen called his opponent's volunteer a what? It's your chance to talk politics. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Ken Rudin is away this week, and today slumming with us is NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving with us in Studio 3A. Nice to see you, Ron.
Good to be with you, Neil.
In the blogosphere, well, it is a buzz about Republican Senator George Allen, who's up for re-election this year in Virginia. During a stump speech on Friday, he called S.R. Siddharth, a volunteer for opponent James Webb, a macaca. Let's take a listen.
My friends, we're going to run this campaign on positive, constructive ideas. This fellow here over here with the yellow shirt, macaca, or whatever his name is, he's with my opponent. He's following us around everywhere. We're going to places all over Virginia, and he's having it on film, and it's great to have you here, and you show it to your opponent, because he's never been there and probably will never come, so it's good for you. So welcome. Let's give a welcome to Macaca here. Welcome to America and the real world of Virginia.
Well, Senator Allen has since apologized for those remarks. But first of all, what's a macaca?
No one seems to know exactly what was going on in the senator's mind here, Neil, what he thought the word meant and whether he thought it was a thing or a name, an actual name. Now, of course, some people have hit their dictionaries and discovered that the word does in some forms refer to a particular kind of monkey or a macaque monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And that term is used by some, including French Tunisians, to refer to people with dark skin. And, of course, this particular campaign worker for Democrat candidate Jim Webb in Virginia, Siddharth is his actual name, is an Indian American and is dark skinned, although he is also a native Virginian and a native and born American citizen. So the fact that he was picking out the one person in a room of 100 who was not a Caucasian and making a reference to him with a word that apparently refers to someone with dark skin, at least in some people's minds, raised the question of what the senator was trying to say. Of course, the senator immediately said he had absolutely no intention of making a racial connotation to this particular individual, and tried to explain that he was picking up a word having something to do with the young man's haircut, which he was describing as a mohawk.
Which wasn't a mohawk. It was kind of a mullet, if it was anything. But the other thing that came up in people's minds is this raises a whole lot of questions about other incidents in George Allen's past. And this is a guy who's was thought to be cruising to a probable victory come November in the senatorial race in Virginia, but a guy who was also thinking about running for president in 2008.
That is correct. At the end of the 2004 campaign, on many people's short lists for Republican candidates in 2008, you saw the name George Allen mm-hmm. of Virginia, partly because he reminded a lot of people of some of the virtues of George W. Bush as a politician, as a candidate, plain spoken, sells well in the South, and so on. And George Allen was, of course, basking in this for some period of time and enjoying that kind of attention. But since that time, there's been a certain amount of scrutiny paid to him, and one of the things that has given people pause on the Republican side is the notion that he has had this reputation from the past where he had a collection of flags, apparently including a Confederate flag, or he kept Confederate flags and he wore a Confederate flag lapel pin and so on, which is code in some parts of the country for sympathy not only with the 1861 to 1865 Confederacy, but also with many of the arrangements of the Old South, Jim Crow among them, and a sense of insensitivity mm-hmm. to what that Confederate flag meant to African Americans.
Here's an email we got from Julia Gilhern in Baltimore. While the term macaca may have been a mistake, is he really savvy enough to know the many meanings? His welcome to America clearly was not. This is by far, she says, Allen's biggest faux pas. Mistaking who Americans really are could be a problem for the average politician.
Indeed, he was suggesting to anyone who heard him that he thought this person was a foreigner and perhaps an immigrant, and so perhaps an infelicitous reference to his origin. Now, of course, at the same time, as Senator Allen has been saying, it is a deep ingrained habit of many American politicians when they leave D.C. to immediately say, it's good to be back in America, mm-hmm. I like being back in the United States, and that sort of thing. And that's what the senator insists he meant the other day.
And there was a time not so very long ago when a speech to a bunch of 100 people at a fundraiser would have gone unnoticed by anybody. In the days of viral video, you can't get away with this anymore. That's what those trackers are doing there.
That's exactly right. This young man is a tracker. He takes a video camera with him. He records whatever the candidate says and does, and he does it, of course, for the purpose of embarrassing the candidate should something embarrassing be said. And in this case, though, that videotape is now worldwide because of the blogosphere.
Let's go to Nevada in the gubernatorial race there. Well, first of all, in the senatorial primary on the Democratic side, a familiar name.
Jack Carter. And yes, he's one of those Carters. He is one of the sons of Jimmy Carter, a former president. And while he has not been in politics and wanted nothing to do with politics in his younger life, a former investment banker and commodities broker, Jack Carter, moved to Nevada 4 years ago. And spotting a good market, he noticed that there were no serious candidates for the Senate nomination against Republican incumbent John Ensign in Nevada this year. And he got in and he got the nomination easily against a very light opposition.
Mm-hmm. There's a good reason there's not much opposition to run against John Ensign.
John Ensign is probably the most popular politician in Nevada and has run very strong there. It is considered to be a very strong favorite to be reelected in November. And Mr. Carter is terribly underfunded at this particular time.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about another aspect of the prime. We could talk about Republican candidates in the northeastern part of the United States. Of course, a lot of focus last week on the state of Connecticut and the fight within the Democratic Party. But some people suspect the real fight there is for the Republicans to hold on to 3 congressional seats in the state of Connecticut, in a state that's turning more and more blue, indeed a whole region that's turning more and more blue.
Here's an interesting anomaly. The small state of Connecticut has 5 congressional districts. John Kerry in 2004 carried all 5 of those districts, all 5, and yet 3 of the 5 sent Republicans to represent them in the United States House of Representatives. They're still there, and it is those 3 who are in some sense or another endangered. 2 of them in particular, Chris Shays and Rob Simmons, they're on just about everybody's top 10 list mm-hmm. of the endangered, but all 3 of those are seats that are under some pressure this year, and it's part of a larger trend in the Northeast, as you mentioned, because next door in New York, there are 2 congressional districts that could flip this year, including one that's very deep-hued Republican and mm-hmm. that has been very rarely thought of as endangered in the past. That's John Sweeney's Hudson River District. Also another one previously represented by Sherry Bollert, a moderate to liberal Republican, certainly on some issues, and he's retiring, and the contest there could result in a Democratic pickup in November. And then down in Pennsylvania, there are no fewer than 4 Republican districts that are considered to be possible pickups for the Democrats this year, all down in the southeastern part of the state in the general Philadelphia area. This appears to be a big Democratic year building in Pennsylvania. So right there in just 3 states, you have 9 Republican districts that could flip.
And the Democrats need 15 if they hope to take control of the House of Representatives. But they were talking about the sea change that, for example, happened in the South years ago. The once solidly Democratic South has now become pretty much the solidly Republican South, partly because a lot of Democrats lost, but also partly because a lot of Democrats switched parties and became Republicans. Now, some Republicans in Kansas are doing somewhat the same thing in this past year or two. Some Republicans in Kansas are switching parties. Paul Morrison is one such example. He became a Democrat last year, and he's now running to be the state's attorney general. He joins us now by phone from his campaign headquarters in Topeka. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks.
Why'd you switch parties?
Well, it was an easy thing for me to do. I'm a career law enforcement guy. I've been a prosecutor for the last 26 years, and partisanship has really never entered into how I do my job. I've always been very, very moderate. I was a moderate Republican for many, many years. I'm like, I think most people in Kansas, I'm a fiscally conservative, socially moderate mm-hmm. type person. And I think that's the way most people in Kansas fall, whether they're Democrats Democrats were Republicans. So for me, it was an easy switch. It was a comfortable switch. Most Democrats in Kansas are a real moderate lot.
And but there are others in the state that have done that, including the former chairman of the Republican Party.
Correct. That's true.
So are you suggesting now that maybe fiscally conservative people like yourself, socially moderates, their home, natural home, should be in the Democratic Party?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm certainly not out there beating the bushes to get anybody to switch. What I do hope that people do, though, is think and examine each candidate, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, in terms of looking at them as a whole person and where they stand philosophically. I think people are sick and tired and getting increasingly sick and tired of the rancor that goes on with partisan politics. And for me, particularly in a law enforcement type job, as attorney general or as a district attorney, it's easy, I think, to be seen more as a law enforcement person than as a politician.
Is it easy for moderates to be accepted these days in the Republican Party in Kansas?
Yeah, I think there's a great hunger out there from people in both parties for good candidates. You know, it's a grueling process, as everybody knows, and particularly in these statewide races. And I think there's a hunger for good candidates that have good credentials, that have a history of being effective in their jobs, to be candidates for state office. And hopefully, I fill that bill.
Ron?
This is Ron Elving. I'd like to interject a question, and I'm speaking now as someone who went to high school in the state of Kansas, and I've always felt Kansas was a place that was conservative before it was cool. Do you not feel as though, to some degree, though you're limiting your future in politics in Kansas? I'm just noting that the last Democrat elected to the Senate in the state of Kansas was George McGill, and he left office in 1938.
Not really. I think... As I said earlier, I think as time goes on, and I think we're starting to see a real sea change in Kansas with people focusing more on the candidate and less on party. And I think that's a trend that has begun here that you're going to start seeing more and more of, hopefully nationally. And frankly, I think that's the way that it should be. I think people are really tired of partisan politics, and particularly and how destructive it's become, and in the gridlock that it's caused, and the problems that it's caused in our inability as a nation to be able to focus on and solve problems many times because of the partisanship and the fact that I think sometimes just the nature of the bickering takes precedent over trying to solve problems. And I think that I strongly believe that if you're a good candidate, you're going to, and you work hard, and you're reasonably well funded, you're going to prevail.
Well, if the problem is partisanship, though, would it be more sensible to perhaps try to mount a campaign as an independent?
I think that argument can be made, but the reality of the situation is, in today's world, I think it is extraordinarily difficult to mount effective campaigns as an independent, because even though there's a big downside to a lot of this partisan bickering, you still need some sort of a structure, party structure, that can be very helpful to help a candidate. And I think it's real tough to do that as an independent, at least in this neck of the woods.
Paul Morrison, thanks very much. Appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
And good luck to you.
Thanks.
Paul Morrison, Democratic nominee for Attorney General of Kansas. We're in the Political Junkie segment. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a listener on the line. Now, this is Rick. Rick's calling us from Lenexa in Kansas.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to comment on what I still see as an absolute failure by the Democrats to capitalize on some of the policy issues that are really failing the Republicans, whether it's in the administration, whether it's foreign policy, Iraq, not even talking about, you know, whether to bring our troops home now or not, but just the failure of the policy and the, you know, the Mideast problems and the neglect for the last 5 years of that section of the world. And, you know, the minimum wage, so many issues that the Republicans do not connect on with the average American. Global warming, environmental issues, and the Democrats, to me, should be out there once a week with a good spokesman, with Harry Reid or Barack Obama or somebody hammering these issues home, that from a policy standpoint, and pointing out these failures and that the current leadership can't be trusted.
Well, with respect, Rick, that sounds like Chairman Dean's speech that we hear every other day. I mean, there seem to be Democratic leaders who make those kind of statements virtually every day.
I did hear him. I did see him the other night. If they have started doing it, it's only been of late, and I just don't see them. If the tables were turned, can you imagine how good of a presentation the Republicans would be making if they had these kind of policy differences mm-hmm. to point out? Because they do a pretty good job even with their failures now, and I just wanted your comments on that.
All right. Ron Elving?
I do think the caller makes a good point that when the Republicans were the out party, which seems like quite a while ago now, but in, let's say, the period 1993-94 when President Clinton was in office and the Senate and House were in Democratic hands, the Republicans did mount a highly cohesive and well-scripted attack on virtually everything they did. They organized their opposition very well, and in 1994, they did take over both chambers of the Congress. Of course, that wasn't effective to get them into the White House until 2000. It's a somewhat different mm-hmm. set of political problems. But I do feel that people expect the Democrats to be more cohesive than Democrats ever have been, and people do expect them to put forward a really effective attack that makes them feel as though there is a coherent alternative for them in November.
Interesting,
they don't feel they're
Democrats
getting
have not come up with a stinger as good as defeatocrats.
Well, now that's an interesting term. The Republicans have been better at coming up with rhetoric that I think brings a bruise that really sticks, and that I'm not sure defeatocrats is going to become part of the language. But for example, just this rhetorical trick of the last, say, dozen years, where Republicans no longer refer to Democrats as Democratic candidates or as Democratic Party, even, they use just the term Democrat, and they drop the IC so that it doesn't sound quite so much like a compliment. They've done that and enforced that discipline across the board. The president uses it, and I think that conveys a certain impression.
Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Our regular political junkie, Ken Rudin, joins us again next week. Thanks, Ron, very much.
My pleasure, Neil.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.